Good morning.
Oh, you're on. Well, why don't we call this to order? We have everyone here. So we've got, and incidentally, and maybe Tawn or Bill can answer this. I'm assuming the meeting is being taped.
Yes, it is being recorded right now.
Yeah. So this will go to the recording will serve as the minutes of the meeting. Last meeting, I drew up a little summary, a written summary, and I plan on doing that as well and sending that out. But it's kind of nice to know that the recording will serve as the minutes, because then it's easier to not worry about a timeline in terms of posting them.
I will share this, Michael. One of the things that we're suggesting for all the committees is that you go ahead and use the recording, and the recording can be posted relatively quickly. But it's very difficult for other people if they're hearing impaired, or if you're just wanting to review some information about what was accomplished in the board meeting, to have to listen to the whole recording. So we can meet the requirements of the open meeting laws by posting the recording right away. But if we could post written minutes as well, that would be really helpful.
I think that's a very good idea, and so that's why I'm going to kind of proceed with this. This is something we may want to discuss at a future governance meeting in terms of accessibility, because
yes,
it's one of the issues you get into from an ADA standpoint. So, that's a biggie. But I'll be getting that. At least we'll have the initial
recording
requirement met with, and then the written form will be going. So we have everyone here. I've got them all listed. Certainly have a quorum, and then we have Tawn and Bill. And is there anyone from the public online here at all? No one that we know of? We don't see anything there. Is there approval of the January 6, 2021 meeting minutes?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Approved. The additional agenda items that we have, there's an item here that we had first at our last meeting on the consistency of the AHS bylaws and policies. And I know that Tom Rose has been turning this into a research project over some time to highlight any possible inconsistencies between the policies and the bylaws. And I don't know where you are on that, Tom, in terms of being able eventually to get us a report.
I've been looking into it. One of the things that I do see is that the main inconsistencies were pretty much at a wash after the last board meeting, when the major inconsistencies were in the 1107 and membership funds section, and the duties and responsibilities of chapters. And on that part of it, we're waiting for some sort of a report from I believe Kelly Corsett before. I mean, it would be a waste of time to do much without coming up with the new recommendations and see how they dovetail into either the policy manual or bylaws, and then see what is required to change on either one.
I believe that what we're going to be getting from Kelly is a report concerning the bylaws and elections.
Right.
And so far, I haven't heard anything from him on that. I know we do have something on our agenda today. We can kick that around a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I know Kelly was hoping to get something to us before this meeting, but okay, it just hasn't arrived yet.
Right. And information received on funds policies and bylaw discussion changes that I got yesterday on the email, I went over that yesterday evening and this morning, looked at it, And depending on what would is the consensus of opinion on how to approach that, there are several things that we can do. Now, 1107 funds are basically gone, so it comes up to rewriting the policy manual and the bylaws just by striking several items. The additional changes, annual meeting change, and membership outreach committees, some of those need to be revisited and discussed a little more deeply. The annual meeting, so that everyone knows why it was recommended to have it in April, because of the being in one of the things that we need to do is to make sure that the state legislature is in session when we're trying to re-up or reappoint board members, so that we don't get into a lame duck situation or a holdover waiting to find if there's a response. So,
those are going to be on our agenda today, and so we'll be going over those.
Yeah.
One by one, and okay. And I think it'll be interesting to see how we can create a system, because one of the items that came up in the past was the issue of, and in fact, even moving on to the next item on, unless someone has something to add on this first item on the consistency of the bylaws and policies, I'd like to kind of move on to the other one. But a question I'd have before we leave that is, how we can establish a system so we make sure that if a policy is adopted, it actually gets put in the policy manual. And I think all of us would want to make sure that, hey, the policy manual is comprehensive. It has every policy that's been adopted, because there have been some things in the past, and we discussed a little bit at the last meeting, the admission policy for active duty military and retired military. And I don't believe that's in the policy manual.
I don't believe it has made it in there under that. It would have been on the section covering there's no section covering that.
Yeah, we can pick that up later, because that's going to be kind of on a hit list of things to make sure they're in that manual. Okay. Are there any additional comments on the consistency of the bylaws and policies? Any inconsistencies right now?
Well, I have a question. Do we have is there a collated or uncollated group of papers that purport to be in the draft of the policy manual itself? Or is this still scattered all over the place? I mean, ultimately, we want to have a sort of bound version, and that's what your point was, which we've been working on in the past. But on the other hand, is there anything that says that we can look at, see what there is today, even though it's not finished? This is the universe of possibilities. Is there such a thing? Does that exist? Hello?
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't quite.
They're in different formats.
Yeah.
I understand the formats, but is there one pile of papers that is everything that's either a draft or a final that somebody could look at and say, okay, the draft number 14 is here? Because when you say is in the policy, there is no policy official finished product yet. So you can't say, is it in the manual? Is it in the pile of draft suggestions? And I have no idea if it is or it isn't, and maybe somebody does, but there's no place where what we're working on is in one place, or is there?
Well, I have the document that I got to everyone. And then if you see, for example, Tom or Bruce or any of the staff members, if you see an indication that no, there's another version that's floating around out there, let us know, and then we can pull everything together. But I'll send you the item that I got from Judge Garbarino.
Okay, because I don't...
It makes me a little antsy because it looks like super draft. This is not a finished product.
Well, but it's okay, and there may be two things that need to go in the pile around Garbarino's version.
Yeah.
But I don't have any idea where even... You know, I can't say that's inconsistent with the Bible. I have no idea. Maybe others have that issue too. So,
Okay. So we've got the in terms of the item on pending policy documents. We've had at the last board meeting, a policy statement was approved concerning the 1107 funds. And you received that document yesterday, which notes the January 8th, 2021 board meeting. And then there's the wording of the policy. And I just put as a note there that, and this is, and by all means, let me know if you see a problem with this. I think in terms of a follow-up, when you've had a board of directors approval of a policy, I think it might be good to say, okay, board secretary, there's Bruce Gwynn right there, and governance chair, you're responsible for making sure that's going to be in the board policy manual. So that those individuals would be the safety net. And I put in two individuals because that way if somebody goes to Tahiti, at least we have someone else who could grab that. But in this particular case, do you see any problems at all with us just proceeding with what was adopted at that meeting, putting that in the policy manual?
Nope.
No problem with that?
Nope.
Good. So now we get into the, as you move on to the items that were sent to you yesterday. On the next page, we are into the changing of the bylaws. And I've quoted from the bylaws there. And when you look at that Article 5 under dues and you get to Section 2 distribution, then those things relate to the 1107 money.
Right.
And in terms of changing the bylaws, would we be recommending to the board that you just eliminate Section 2?
I think that's the best solution for it is to just delete the Section 2 because that's the only part that is in conflict with the new policy.
I agree.
Yeah.
Simplest.
Recommending that be dropped from the bylaws.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Yes.
We just recommend that under the Article 5 dues Section 2 distribution just be removed from there because there is no dues over a membership level or anything there. And there's no reason to distribute anything to chapters after thereafter. So,
yeah.
My opinion is just recommend deletion. We can go on to the next set.
Do people agree on that? Do we have an agreement on that?
Yeah, I think that's the correct action. But I'm looking at the. I want to make sure I'm looking at the current bylaws related to the other question about the current policy.
Yeah.
What I have is shows the last amended date is April 12th, 2019.
2019, April 12th. That's the last verified change.
That is the current one. Okay, good. All right.
Last approved change.
Yeah. That's all that counts. It's not approved, so yeah. Okay, good. Good. We're on track.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that Article 5, we're striking that, and that recommendation will go to the board.
Very good.
The Article 11 on chapters, here's another item that is related to that 1107 fund change. When you go to Article 11 on chapters, and you get down to Section 2 on powers and responsibilities, and then you go under E on monies, then you'll notice it's talking about the board of directors of the chapter shall raise funds, and you'll recall that the policy removing the 1107 funds also removed the responsibility of the chapters to raise funds.
Right.
So we have this item here which needs to be altered. At least it seems to me it needs to be. Are we into a situation where we may say just eliminate one, that particular paragraph, you can leave two?
I think one should be taken out just like we did before. Two.
Yeah, that would be my suggestion after having read it. We could remove that complete section, but the section two, I think that might come still under something that we want to keep in the chapter duties and responsibilities, that gives a little closer to cooperation between your local 501c3s being able, and basically allows the chapters to, and the board and the society to deal with the 501c3s through an agreement to raise funds for local chapters. And I think it's very important that we have that in there, because we have lost all of the other methods to fund special items that local chapters need. So rather than this pretty much delineates that the 501c3s are there to raise funds in support of local chapters, not statewide use.
I would say that in terms of that section, whatever the number E means, the first sentence probably should remain and be combined with the second one. So in other words, the board shall raise funds and assist elders for the benefit of the society. Well, I mean, you can't really argue that. It's going to say the chapters of the society, and then the chapter may allow private entities and so forth. So it says, you know, raising money for the benefit of the AHSs. Can't argue with that. And then the chapter will also help the 501c3 fund for the chapter itself. They kind of, so you don't want to say you don't have authority to, you know, raise funds. I mean, it's implied, I guess. It's so obvious, but you just put that first sentence with just call it one thing, it seems to flow better. So,
in response to that, the director shall raise funds, etc. That section needs to go away because we've already absolved the chapters from any responsibilities for raising funds for AHS. They can raise funds for their own chapters.
It's amazing.
And that's why I wanted to look at the number two retaining.
Well, talking about making that number first thing, you don't say shall raise funds. You could say it that way. You just say may raise funds.
Mm-hmm.
And then put that sentence.
But the second one says a chapter may allow privates to do it. The board has been absolved of the responsibility to raise funds.
So what I'm saying is that it may raise them for the society in paragraph one. Paragraph two says it may do it for the chapter through a private fund. It's slightly two different things. So if you say it can raise funds for the society, not necessarily shall, but with a mandated thing. And then secondly, that sentence then begins at paragraph two, and it may also allow private entities to do it for the benefit of the chapter. It's completely consistent that way. So anyway, maybe it's too much of a lawyer thing, but it's whatever everybody else thinks, but.
Would you excuse me? I had my internet connection, I think, is going strange. Would there be a problem if we just eliminate that first paragraph and then just go ahead and just keep the second one?
What I was saying, and I'm not going to make a big issue out of it, if you leave the first sentence in of paragraph one only, strike everything after the first sentence, and then combine the first sentence with part two, make it one paragraph. So it says the board of the chapters, instead of saying shall raise, it says may raise funds, consist of it for the benefit of society, i.e. the society at large. And then also the chapter may allow private entities qualified under IS to raise funds for the chapter itself. It's just two slightly different provisions that should in one paragraph.
My take on the deal, though, is that the board of directors of the chapters raising funds, we've already said in a policy manual that the board of directors of the chapters is not responsible for raising funds. So the second part of it, the chapter will allow private entities to raise funds. It's not in conflict with our policy manual resolution of January 8th this year.
Yeah.
So meeting that entire section would bring it in to compliance with the new funds policy that was adopted in the policy manual. So that's kind of the thing that I was looking at in the conflict in the two.
There's no conflict.
We're not responsible. Then you go and the bylaws say you are. The policy say you're not.
No, the policy, if it says may, you're authorized to raise funds. You don't want to say you're not authorized to raise funds for the state benefit of the whole society. That'd be crazy.
What I'm hearing from Richard is if you kept that first sentence from that paragraph E1 and you change shall to may.
And then combine it with two.
You take that first sentence, change shall to may, then combine it with the paragraph two, then you're safe because you're not creating an obligation. If they want to raise money, they can do that, but they have no obligation to do so.
It's just a common sense changes, and the rest of the paragraph one then goes out except for after we raise funds, may raise funds for the society. You don't say you can't raise funds for the society, it'll be crazy. So anyway.
Would Bruce or Tom have any problem with keeping that sentence if shall is turned to, changed to may?
I think the may changes the whole gist of that sentence, and I think that's all right. It doesn't go against I don't believe it goes against the policy that was approved that says we are absolved of the responsibility of.
Right.
No responsibility inferred here, so I think it's all right.
Okay, so if we change that to may and then combine that with that section two paragraph, we're safe.
Well, I think it'll work that way.
Okay, why don't we do that?
Yeah, would you strike?
Are we agreed on that?
Except for the motion to say, in the first sentence of one, it would say change shall to may, and then strike everything after.
Yes.
And then combine it with.
The second sentence probably needs to be
Well, you can renumber it or make it one paragraph and give it what for. But
fees such as dues received and disbursed by the society or funds received and disbursed to the chapter shall be used for such purposes as chapter designated. Right. It kind of can, that kind of messes it up, doesn't it?
Yes, right.
Strike that.
So that gets stricken.
Okay. Right. Thing after the first sentence.
Right. Okay. So we've got the board of directors of the chapter may raise funds and assist others with raising funds for the society. Then we go right on down to that second section of the chapter may allow private entities, et cetera, et cetera.
Perfect.
We're in agreement?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
We're in agreement. Great. The moving on, we've got annual meeting changes, and you have the board voted at the October 23rd, 2020 meeting to change the annual meeting. And in looking over it, I realized it's a rather interesting version of this, where the annual membership meeting should be held shortly after the fiscal year close and upon the issuance of the annual report. And so the idea of that annual report is proposed to be held as soon as the report can be prepared, but no later than September 30th. Now, you'll notice under our current bylaws with Article 10, meetings, Section 1, membership annual meeting, it has the annual meeting and membership of the society shall be held in April. And remember, the idea was it was to be close to the history convention, and then you have the legislature being in session. It'd be held in April of each year or at such other date as may be fixed by the board and notice provided to the membership. What is the take on how to approach that? We could just eliminate the April of each year or no later, put in no later than September 30th of each year.
Yes. That would work.
Is that the sense? So we're going to have be held no later than September 30th.
Yep, I'm good with it.
At the end of each year or such other date as may be fixed by the board. So the only change there is really it shall be held in Arizona no later than September 30th of each year. We're in agreement.
Is that what the discussion with the board was? If that's what everybody wants, then no.
Well, what is your sense on that, Richard?
Well, I'm just trying to, I've lost my page now. I have it, exchange in. So this is actually what they voted shortly after the fiscal year close. Do we want to say the fiscal year close date or the Is that June 30th? What is the fiscal year close date?
June 30th.
And upon issuance of the annual report, proposed meetings shall be held as soon as the report can be prepared. And what is the date of the annual meeting now? Or prior to this change?
We were going with annual meetings in April, but of course, due to the pandemic, we kept kicking it back.
Yeah, okay. So, I don't think it makes any difference. I mean, if that's what's more comfortable, then, I don't know about the drafting, the contextual thing shortly is not really a term used commonly in translation. You can say as soon as practical or as, some other, I don't know, it's just, maybe it's too nitpicky, but it's not particularly, shortly, it's not a big deal.
Language wise, yeah, as I understand you, you'd want to have some language referring to the after the fiscal year close and after issuance of the annual report?
No, just that.
Later than September 30th?
No, the only word at all I'm talking about is the word shortly, as a legal or legislative standard. If you say shall be held as soon as practical, or the equivalent of that, after the fiscal year, the planning agency shall have a report, the proposed meeting, that says, it begins with proposed meeting shall be held. Is that what the board resolution was, or did you just write that in? It doesn't look like a complete sentence.
Oh, no, I know. That was I took that from the minutes. I'm saying the wording was a little obscure. And so we're as I understand it, your position would be to say it should be held as soon as practicable
after
the fiscal year, close of the fiscal year, and upon issuance and after issuance of the annual report.
But
no later than September 30th.
If you just put after report and strike the rest till you get to but no later than September 30th, this sentence here would say proposed meeting held after report can be prepared, and also the word should is another awkward, it either must or it's a suggestion. And I don't like the word shall as a drafting term, but you say will be, whatever. But the annual meeting will be held as soon as practical after the fiscal year close and the foundation of the annual report, but no later than. Now it's a little more crisp and a little more precise. So when it says should be meeting shortly after, you've got a whole lot of mush in there that's not necessary. So either you mean it or you don't. In other words, if you mean,
I agree.
But not later than it should say that.
Okay, as I understand what you've said, you're saying it will be held as soon as practicable after the end of the fiscal year and the issuance of the annual report, but no later than September 30th.
Yes.
I got proposed as soon as the report can be repaired. You see, it's got three mushy things in there. Shortly can.
I would leave out shortly. I mean, that's, those are rabbit holes.
That is another one, too, is a suggestion. So take that out. It looks pretty clean from there. That would be my suggestion.
I would suggest we simplify this a little bit more. Tying it more to dates and more simple, but just say annual meeting of the membership society will be held in Arizona after the issuance of the annual report, but no later than September 30th.
Okay, too.
And that gets it very simple and very succinct. But it's got two limiting factors. It's got the issuance of the annual report and September 30th as the latest. So those are two parameter endpoints.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that works.
We're on it?
All good.
Okay.
So that will that work for everyone?
Yes.
That looks good. It's very simple, clear. So it's in Arizona after the issuance of the annual report, but no later than September 30th.
Yep.
We got that. Great. Moving on. We have the elections item, and then we're moving on to the next item in the agenda with regard to the board elections. And I know that Kelly Corsett was working on an item related to that. We have, as mentioned, we haven't gotten anything from Kelly. We can kick this back in terms of waiting until we hear from his group. One, I'll just give you a quick reaction, and I'm interested in your reaction on this. But I know that one of the concerns was, you know, this came about because you have the Historical League.
You froze up, Wade.
To freeze up.
Hang on here. Maybe I'd call him. I don't have his number. Yes, I do.
We've lost Michael.
I'm calling him right now.
Okay.
No, he lost him. He disappeared.
Yeah.
He's probably got to try to sign on again.
Yeah. Yeah, he's back. There you go.
I'm back.
There you go. Okay.
I was just going to say, the more I looked at it, the more I thought maybe we should just not touch it at all. Because, you know, really, I mean, if you look at it may make it harder.
Yeah.
It's kind of first do no harm.
I agree.
Really, because if you get rid of that nominations from the floor, that could be nightmarish. You could have a situation where you have some slate and somebody gets in a car wreck or something. So, yeah, what is your sense on that? We sit tight?
I would suggest we wait and listen to what Kelly's coming up with, and that way we won't be working at cross purposes.
Yeah, and, so we're sitting tight. We'll see what they come up. They come up with some genius response, and that's
look
nice.
Into it and see, and then match it to all the other processes we've got.
Mm-hmm. Is there a consensus on that?
I'm just kind of following you. With Section 10 meetings, part where it says April, of course, has to be changed, as we discussed. Where's it talking about elections of the membership? I think something here, which you were talking about, nominations and all that stuff, is that in a different section?
Yes. We've got that with Article 7, and we get down to Section 1 and then 1G with the nominating committee. That's the elections area.
Oh, okay. Well, that's the... So
we're sitting tight, believe it, we have to hear from Kelly's group, and it may be, you know, if he comes up and I'm getting another signal and my internet connection is unstable, then that could be wild. But my suggestion is let's just sit tight. It's just like Tom said, we're waiting to hear from the other group.
Yep, I agree.
Now, the membership committee issue came up. Linda Whitaker had raised the question of whether the board should have a membership committee. And I remember years ago serving on a membership committee where we said this should be abolished because it's a staff responsibility. And when you have board members and staff members together on a committee, you start to lose accountability. It's okay, who's responsible for membership? And so Linda was suggesting that we look at whether the membership committee, and we on that page I sent you, we're back down to under Article 7, Section 1F, the membership committee will have the responsibility to promote continuous recruitment of new members and to generate membership renewals in the society. should we just eliminate that committee? Because that's really more of a staff responsibility.
Yeah, Michael, that would be my opinion.
I'm sorry. The correction is that's actually Article 9.
9, yeah.
Okay, you're right. I was looking up earlier. You're right. Article 9, and you're into Section...
Section F, Foxtrot.
Yeah, Section 1F.
Yeah, right. We're getting into our military.
You froze up again.
Uh-oh.
You must be way on the edge of Phoenix.
Bruce?
There you go.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. It's actually, here's the thing that's funny. I'm in north central Phoenix. I'm in the middle of town.
Okay.
Unbelievable. I know. You know, and then, yeah, if I were on the outskirts, I'd have great coverage. Okay, so the consensus is eliminate the membership committee?
Yes.
Yes.
Richard? Yeah, it would be assuming the board wants to do that. You just very simply, you just strike it. You have
to strike it.
Remember the alphabet and that's it.
There. We strike that. Then moving on to the next item is the membership outreach category. And at the previous board meeting, there were discussions about the role of the chapters. And one of the things that I know that I've surfaced there and other people have surfaced at various times was if the chapters aren't going to fundraise, you don't want chapters doing things in which they're going to step on the toes of staff and they're going to be just continual friction. But one of the strengths of chapters is they do have local contacts. They are kind of the face of the society and local communities. And we have had for a very long time a situation in which if you're going to be a member, you have to be a paying member. And if you cease to pay, then you're no longer a member. And the idea behind an outreach membership category, and I've got this idea from talking with people from chapters over the years, is that you would have this non-paying category where if you talk to Sally June or John Doe and they're interested in the Historical Society, you can say, give us your email address. We will put you on our list. You'll be told about all of our events. You don't get free admission. You don't get the journal. You don't get to vote. But presto, you're a member. And even if you've been a paying member and you cease to be a paying member, you're still a member. So we're going to bear hug you and keep you within our grasp forevermore. And the idea behind this, of course, is that you're creating a feeder pool of people who could be recruited for paying membership. You're getting a higher profile. And if you had a scenario in which we have X number of paying members, but we've got 25,000-30,000 or more of these outreach members, we would have a lot of clout with the legislature. It would help us in the local communities, and it would certainly put reminders via emails concerning society events of the Historical Society in front of a much wider population. So that's kind of the method and the madness. Discussion. What do you think?
You know, well, go ahead, Richard. I'll wait.
I mean, if we can flesh it out just a little bit, but you can, I certainly, for years, we talked about, you know, the impact with legislature or anybody else is heavily influenced by what is your base. You know, how many, well, we represent 100,000 people is a different discussion than we have a few hundred, just by the nature of political reality. On the other hand, you know, the counterargument, just as a flat, anybody can be a member, would pay nothing, and just, you could say, well, it dilutes it. However, if you want to be a member of the Republican Party or Democratic Party, you say, sign me up, and you're in, okay? You're in the club. So, and then if you want to be a big shot, you got 10 or 20 different layers of donations to get a gold star, a red star, a silver star, and all that stuff. So I can see that there should be a, for self-interest and in extending the outreach to, or you can, you know, you can be a member of the Audubon Society, you know, you buy their magazine and you can be just a member, okay? So you don't have to pay $100 a year to be a member, you know. So anyway, I'm grasping a little for the right context, so that to rebut the argument, well, you dilute the whole thing and, you know, on the other hand, just maximize the outreach. So I think maximizing the outreach on some basis like that is a good idea. So
I've got a comment. So I'm confused by this. I don't really understand what the purpose is here. It feels to me like it's an artificial way of inflating our membership. And I'm not sure everyone is aware that we communicate regularly with a large group of subscribers to our email communications who are not members. So our email list now is over 5,000, while our membership is hovering just short of 1,600. So we have a rather large outreach beyond our membership and are continuing to grow that through a number of different means. And my fear is that we do dilute the value of that membership. And I guess the other thing that I will share is that this is completely contrary to industry best practices. So a membership is a paid, it's a paid assignment. I am paying to belong to this organization, show my support. I'm getting something of value in return. And, therefore it's a true relationship. It's a mutually beneficial relationship. So, I have some major concerns with this. With this concept,
well, I think just on that point, then we're looking at the middle ground. But there's no reason you couldn't classify the people who receive and have agreed to receive our news stuff in the call them supporters, and then you have members. And now, and they are supporters if they're willing to interested in receiving it and going to functions. And then you have members, and that's a little bit of what I'm saying, where you have tier levels in different organizations. So you can be a supporter if you just want to be a supporter, like a docent, okay? You could say, I'm volunteering, I don't want to be a member, I'll just give you my time, and you take it, I assume. So the point is, a supporter, and it could be a donor name, but say, we have 5,000 supporters and 1,800 members, so we got 5,000 people, maybe we get there with, to Michael's point, that way. They're not members, but they're supporters, and then they're proud to be a supporter, but they may live in Minnesota, they don't want to get shown and most stuff. So anyway, that may be a way to go. It's just a possibility.
Bruce, Tom, what do you think?
Go ahead, Tom. I'm still thinking.
I kind of agree with the last statement there about supporters, and with Tom, we already have that wide selection of over 5,000 people interested, what you call interested persons. If we're going to do something like membership outreach category, then they're going to be supporters. We have to go to a new article because they're not members or not memberships. So, yeah, I think it's the best way to address this is to not address it other than a staff or maybe even a policy statement that anyone involved in assisting can receive certain items, whatever they get in the email notifications of events, all of the upgrades except for the membership benefits. That way we don't really have to do anything on paper. It's there, or we can either address it as a policy or just leave it alone and let staff use it as a possible or a what you could call a potential membership pool. I think that would be suitable. You could even go to the legislature with it. Look, we've got this many people are interested. This many people are actively supporting. You still have a pretty good number.
Yeah, I think that you could do a policy, a short policy, to say it is a policy of the board to encourage a category of people interested in this society called, it's called supporters or pick a name.
Right. You could address it in the policy manual. It doesn't have to be in the bylaws, because under membership, there's a wide range of things that can be done.
I think that you don't need to have a different category in the bylaws. I agree with you. You should have a policy saying we encourage supporters who are interested in these people elect the newsletter. They get invitations to events. They get this, they get it. And now it's has to be something semi-official or even made up. We got folks out there that like us. Here's a bunch of names, not names, but I mean. So having a policy that says, and I'm not committed to the word supporter, but whatever word it is, and we have a policy that encourages developing supporters who are a pool for potential membership. You've been a supporter here for 2 or 3 years. You might want to consider membership. We have a new program. We have this. So I think we can get exactly where we want to go, because why bother with a policy? The policy is it makes it something official rather than a staff initiative of just, you know, making some phone calls. And we can then cite it as a part of our overall outreach. 1,800 members, 5,000 supporters. And we can defend it's not diluting anything, because it says these are people who have asked for and received our newsletters, asked for invitations to our events, and have a love for history. So we can defend it pretty easily on that basis. And so I like the idea, just the way it's been described. Not a whole membership thing, not a different price, just a policy.
If I may weigh in, I mentioned last time there was a model here in Yuma. Actually, there's two models here in Yuma. One was the Yuma Golf and Country Club. Those old guys that started it found out there were no young guys joining it because it's too damned expensive. And so they created what they called a youth membership. So up to the age 30, it was $100 a month, but you had to pay, for a round of golf, as well as the members didn't. And guess what? All those people, and that was back when I was a kid, are now members of the Yuma Golf and Country Club, and they kept going. So it brought the youth in, and we have noticed at the Redondo Day event that we have every year, we have a group of about 25 young people that just like to do things, and there they are. They're helping us do things. They're not members of the deal because it's $65 or $50, but they like doing things. So they decorate our tables. They do this. They do that. They run the bar for us, and it's created some interest and excitement. The other one I mentioned, and I'll repeat, for some that you weren't here, is the Yuma County Fair. They've had a foundation of 40 people since God knows when, but I got put onto it when I was 20 years old. Came home from college. My brother told me to go help with the horse show, so I went out there to help with the horse show. It's better than working. And next thing I know, I'm on the commission. Well, I did that for 20 years on that commission, helping tractor pulls, God, whatever they had, you just went out and did it. And for that, you got to park inside the fair with a free parking pass. It's a great pay. Point is, it drew me in. So I think that on an interest and excitement level, which is most important, and that's how Redondo Days got started. Interest and excitement first. If we can raise some money second, that's even better. And I'm going to push forward with it if nobody objects greatly, is a foundation that we pick. We go out and ask them, would you like to join? Or if people find out about it, want to join, they can. But we're thinking about charging $25, because there needs to be a little skin in the game. And for that $25, they get a dinner at the end of the year with their significant others. So they come out way ahead otherwise. But their purpose is to help with all of the events we have all year long, whether it be a docent, whether it be cleaning up in the yard, whether it be putting on Redondo Days, whether it helping with the garden talks, all those sort of things all year long. And from that, going back to the foundation, the hard workers are the ones that got picked to go on the board. They were saying, hey, let's nominate that person to be on the board. They've worked their tail off for 3 years out there. The slackers, they never made it to the board. So eventually, these people will become members. I there's no doubt in my mind, but it also assists the local chapter in interest and excitement, which doesn't happen with an email. I'm talking about Tom and the 5,000. An email doesn't create it. Actual involvement does. And I said, one more thing, driving by a church somewhere, it said, the fastest way to stop criticism is encourage involvement. And it works really fast. So yep. To get interest and excitement, get them involved, and all of a sudden things are blowing and going. So that's why I like this outreach thing. So
have that as a tier in the membership arena, or a cousin to the membership arena, and still have your supporter category who just want to hear about it and cheer from the background. Your point is you're making a smaller step to get into the ladder of going ahead with something more official, and you can just attach that to our different membership programs or categories or use or whatever you want. So I like that idea too, but it's not inconsistent with having, you know, the supporter category who just want to, from Minnesota, get feedback and then maybe come out here once a year to snowbird. So it's just an add-on to the outreach rather than an alternative. It's an add-on, I think, what you're saying. So anyway, that's my response.
I was just going to say, so, you know, what I'm hearing is I welcome assistance from the board in terms of outreach. And I would love to see more outreach by the board in trying to get people to buy memberships, to get involved, to come to programs, to attend our virtual programming. And I think that's fabulous. I'm just a little, I don't know why we need a policy that says we're going to encourage people to become supporters or to become members. That's what we do as a staff function. We actively reach out to people who attend our virtual programs and invite them to become members and invite them to participate in, you know, XYZ and, you know, actively recruit. So I guess I'm confused a little bit about what is the purpose of a policy relative to this function?
The policy isn't to tell hard workers like you that you need to do this. You've already done it. The policy gives it some official status that says there is such a thing as supporters, and staff generates it and they kind of do this. So that when we say we have 5,000 supporters, it's within the context of our definitions of who we relate to, versus, well, Tom's done a real good job of getting some folks interested. It makes it, for our purposes and the practical, having them interested, having them do stuff is the bottom line. But for purposes of legislative and overall profile, to say we have members and we have supporters, it's really all the policy is to say we have members, and that's a bunch of these people, and we have supporters. And then supporters, it just gives it a little more substance, that's all. It has nothing to do with telling people what to do or anything else.
Here's what I'm wondering is, and one of the reasons why I would stress this is I had a conversation with the chapter president, and the chapter president was very keen on this concept. And the person said, you know, we're not, our chapter members are not people who will run out and ask people to contribute money. They don't like fundraising, but they will ask them to become non-paying members. And I understand your concerns on that. I believe if you have that chapter boards moving on making those connections, getting those, and let me use Richard's term, supporters. So if we moved it to kind of an outreach supporter category, take it to the full board and say, this is this idea, what is your reaction on this? Then we'll have that advantage. I think this is a very credible role for the chapters, the chapter boards. It could increase the number of supporters considerably if you're reaching people and you're not asking them for money and you're asking them for contact information. Right now, the numbers that the staff has in terms of these people who are not members or contacts, I think would be dwarfed by the numbers that the chapters could produce. It's really a non-controversial role on the part of the chapters, and it makes it an easy sell because the more people who get on the email list, who can turn around and you've given them a title, as Richard noted, a supporter, and you've got your paying members, but these people are supporters, that is a politically powerful cadre of people. And it once again gives us that closer relationship. As to whether this is unusual in terms of the museum business, I'm not worried about that because I think the museum business on the whole is in trouble. And so when I look at other, I know of organizations where their idea is, okay, we're going to be very inclusive. And then there are others where, no, you have to pay X amount of dollars to be a member. Well, if at the very least, I'd say why don't we consider this as an outreach supporter category and at least bring the idea to the board to see what their reaction is?
I agree.
So how would you define it then? It's a proposing an outreach supporter category?
Yes. And that we'd have this would be a responsibility of the chapter boards to increase this bank of supporters.
And members. I'd like to see them get members.
Well, that would be the end result of it.
Well, that'll be the end result of it because you're building up a feeder pool. Right now, you go to some young couple and say, okay, why don't you become a member? And then you tell them the entry-level fee, and they're not going to join. In reality, they're not going to join. But eventually they will, perhaps, if we get them in that supporter pool.
You can send them a little card, a supporter, and maybe they get a discount when they buy a journal retail. It doesn't matter, but to get a little card, some status, and say, would you like to be a supporter? What do I have to do? Well, we'll send you an email. We'd like to invite you to our events. We'd like you to meet our director or whatever. Well, why not? Now, you don't want just to run the numbers. Okay, that's always going to come up. But the point is that most people don't like emails they don't want. And if they want the email, they want the notice to say, and then the email heading would be for a newsletter, for example, we send out, there would be one thing you send them. And it's say, dear lover of history, dear supporter, dear honor, whatever. So it's actually a little bit more inside than just the news from the Democratic Party. This has a little more of an insider. You are a supporter. I'm not necessarily involved with that word or not, but it's good. But I think you want to distinguish, which was my initial concern, the notion of membership issue, and so you don't call it, a poor boy member. I said, of course, so supporter or some word like that. I think it's a great idea, and with a policy, with something semi-official, it could even be a board resolution. Anyway, that would be a policy. To be able to say, well, who are you and what do you have? Well, we've created an outreach program for supporters of 5,000 people, and we have 2,000 members of whatever the number is. That's pretty impressive, particularly since we used to have 3,000 or 4,000 members. And, now we have 1,600. Well, and I don't think it's a game either. I don't think it's like, We're gaming the system by phoning up people. Anybody that gets this stuff has an interest. If they have an interest, they're supporters, and then they're influencers. That's the buzzword, influencer. all of those people can be influencers for us, particularly if we call, give them, you're an AHS supporter. It's really a way to push back on this declining official membership. You know, while you're not even becoming relevant, nobody likes you anymore. Of course, it's the whole Museum Society issue. It's just such a great idea that, and you can flesh out a little bit, well, what is a supporter? A person that likes this, does this, has this. I don't know, you can even make a one paragraph description. Okay. Again, the whole point is they make it a something versus folks that drop in. I think it's really
okay, would you, you want to plan on, we take this to the board, is this outreach supporter category?
Yes.
Do we have that? Okay. Bruce, you favor that? Tom? What do you think?
Jim, I would say go ahead, but the one stipulation would be to see if we couldn't get a specific wording as to what we'd like to see there. If it is going to be either a new category of membership or a policy change in membership, we need to know exactly what we're looking for in the matter of wording. So,
and as I heard from Richard there, you know, one of the things in his remarks was we may just be looking at a resolution.
It's hard to keep track of those is the only thing, because there's no place. You have to go through 40 years of meeting minutes to find all of these resolutions. So it's very difficult to identify. That's been one of the problems with a lot of the issues we came up with in rewriting bylaws and policies. So, according to bylaws, the directors establish membership categories and qualifications. So if we're going to establish a membership outreach or a supporter category, it should be, stacked in there like in, under membership, sections. We've got honorary membership, affiliate membership, membership status for officers, et cetera. Get another section that says, non-paying member, supporter, whatever it is the wording wants to be, and just have a little section in there.
Well, I don't think it matters. I agree that you have to define what it is we're talking about for sure.
Yeah.
A supporter is a person that is in the ranks. And whether you put it as, my only issue or reluctance on membership is not the concept. I just don't want to get into a counter argument of diluting membership. So, but it's a broad category. So the board could bat it around and say it could be, and I agree, just a resolution because of your point, it can be lost in the shuffle. A policy, if we're doing your job right, will be in a book and it will not disappear, as some in the past have. So whether it's in the bylaws under some category of membership in the policy, it has to be something, and then define what a supporter is. And, like you do an honorary member, I don't know if we have any anymore, but, and so it has some substance to it, but, however you get to it is less important than the idea and the concept of, extending outreach by, to people who really would like to do stuff, but for purposes of buying the journal or paying money, you know, it's just a good idea. So that can be tossed around within the board itself, to Michael's point. So
we have a February 8th, governance committee meeting. Why don't we put that thing on our agenda in terms of a supporter, outreach supporter category, and discuss it there.
Very good.
I would just recommend avoiding, you know, calling it another membership category, but instead it's a policy where it's a support outreach or supporter, policy where the board is accepting responsibility for participating.
Right. Yeah. I think we have a sense here that supporter could be a much more effective and more accurate term. So let's put that on our agenda for the February 8th governance meeting. Any objection to that?
Nope, let's do it.
We're set. Well, we've got a number of items that will be, of course, we'll be hearing from Kelly for the next meeting. And Jim Snitzer had some ideas about the role of the treasurer in the finance committee. I have not heard, the last I heard from Jim, he said he didn't have anything in writing. He didn't have anything fleshed out at this stage. And we can also talk a little bit further concerning the chapter roles and perhaps issues concerning their ability to reach historical organizations and foster positive relationships with historical organizations within their regions. So are there any other items that you believe we should address in a future meeting?
Well, just the one you and I talked about at the beginning of the meeting, you know, where this piece of paper describes what the board of directors are incorrectly.
Yes. Okay, a very good point. I've got that down there. I've written it down. Yeah, and that's actually out on the website, right?
It is. It's even worse when he said the chapter boards. Says the chapter boards will decide what their responsibilities are.
Yeah. Okay. Big problem. Yeah. Yeah. That's a little scary. Anything else at this point?
Nope.
We're set.
Good meeting.
I want to thank all of you very much, and thank you for putting up with my bizarre internet connection.
Thank you. Good meeting. Thanks.
Hey, thanks. We'll see you. Ha, 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 ha.